Also from my side, a very, very warm welcome to all of you. I am very honored to share my experiences with you, knowing a little bit who is there. Hari Prasad gave me a little preview of my listeners, a little insight who will come, and I very, very much appreciate that you shifted your schedules around to make time for this session today. I'm very, very excited to give this session for two reasons. One is, I feel really when we come to these existential moments in our life, these moments that are not packed in the normal routine of what we usually do, that we discover new insights, new perspectives, new strengths even. So returning back to my own experiences and being able to share it with the Upbuild community excites me entirely. It forces me also to go back to those moments to tell them, not so much from a distant perspective, but from someone who was really there. So I need to go back in my memory to come there. The second reason why I'm so excited is because I really feel with the events which I'm going to share, I can really give you life lessons that will speak very directly to you, maybe even reflect what you already long for, what you already aspire for, and make it more clear to you and give you thus the required strengths to move forward. So yes, it's a personal thing for me to talk about it, but I hope to really sow seeds within my audience that will grow and empower you and strengthen you in your own journey. I must say a little disclaimer. You will soon find out that I'm trying to speak, as Viktor Frankl said, German with a little English accent. In other words, there will be, please forgive my mistakes in grammar and in verbs and using the right verb. But I feel this is not at all a problem here, because when someone has such an important subject like "my house is on fire," he will not need to be an expert linguist to communicate that. So since we are dealing today with existentially important subjects, the language will hopefully not be a barrier between us, even if I chose the wrong words at times. Good. Having said all this, I would like to begin. I'm speaking from a point where I hold the notion that our ideas of death determine and define our life. What if it is true that we are not human beings who also have a soul somewhere, but we are souls who at the moment make a human experience and have the tremendous opportunity to choose, to define, to correct the experiences so that we are not victims any longer, but we are creators, paintings of our life. I have seen that the near-death experience which I made during surgery, which I will now share with you, has really permanently restructured my life. It has given me an entirely new perspective, and I've seen things which I have overlooked before. I feel a little bit that I was, before this experience, like a painter who was totally entangled, involved, and overwhelmed by his own painting. But then the experience gave me the chance to step back, like good painters should do, and look from a healthy distance at the painting. And all of a sudden I saw, wow, he is so simple. Here I changed this, here I changed that, and in this way improve the painting of my... So this is an analogy that wants to say that so often we are overwhelmed, we are entangled, we are, so to say, surrounded by pressing things in our life which take over our life and overwhelm us so entirely. But if we could just step back, make a healthy distance, we could see everything in proportion. And no, this is not essential. Let it go. This is more essential. I have not thought of it. Let it come into my life. And in this way, we are really in a good place to actually live by our deeper inner convictions. Good. It was around, I'm not so good in years, the around 88 or 1990, that I was committed to the hospital for three surgical invasions. One was something on the top of the head. It was not a bad cancer or something like this. No, it was just some outgrowth. Then a torn ligament. But the most intense one was a hernia. These are all considered routine surgeries, nothing to worry. I still remember when I was wheeled into this operation theater that I talked to the anesthetist, and the anesthetist told me, "You, it's nothing. And by the way, we are a routine, this is a routine thing, you won't feel a thing." I still remember it. But I felt many things. And immediately when I was able to write after the surgery, I wrote a diary from which I will at times quote. The first thing is here. The lids of my eyes become heavier. The last thing I notice are the metallic sounds of different surgical instruments that are being readied. I hear again the voice of the friendly anesthesiologist. "Mr. Monk, rest for some time in peace. you won't feel a thing. Then blackness all around me and absolute numbness. I was put into anesthetic numbness, and this was for all the body, because remember, feet, abdomen and head had to be worked on. The next thing I remember noticing is a very sharp pain, almost as if you've cut yourself with a razor blade in a moment of inattention. It was small, but it increased. Then I came to some amount of consciousness, and I noticed there is a discussion going on. As I said, it's a routine surgery. Dr. Bauer, my surgeon, talks about a particular golf move. The pain gets stronger. Stronger as I become more aware, and I cannot hear anything, I cannot deal with anything. I start to panicking as the pain gets overwhelmingly strong. It is just so bad that I think I must give them a sign that something went wrong here. So, okay, let's remember biology. How do you move your body? Well, first comes the will, then the determination. Then you somehow bring that to the place, the finger, for instance, or the arm which you want to lift. I try, but my body is not under my control. It is made immobile by the it's a derivative of what the Amazon Indians use when they shoot with arrow. Curare is the word, maybe you've heard it. And the pain still increases every second. I just don't know how long it is humanly possible for me to tolerate, and so on. Then something more impactful happens. And because I wrote this in my diary right after it happened, I just want to share this with you. I will read. Then something crazier still happens. In an instant, I suddenly disconnect from the body. The only way I can explain it now is in the language of the train system. Imagine a passenger car is connected to a long queue of wagons which are pulled by a powerful engine. So sometimes it can happen that a wagon dislodges and then continues to move on, but slows down. This moment of dislodging the wagon, this is what I felt. I dislodged from the body. Yes, I saw myself above the body, looking down on what happened there, the surgery, the staff around Dr. Bauer, the main surgeon. I saw the metallic instruments. I saw the various, things dripping into my the pipes, where the anesthesia kept on dripping into my blood. But I was above the body and I was not feeling pain. For a moment, I was just so relieved that I remember I just floated around in absolute pain relief. But then an idea came to me. I think no one likes to see his own blood or his own bleeding. And when I looked down, I started to have an uncomfortable feeling, even in my relief. So I said, let me leave this place, let me not look. And solely on my will, I started to move out of the surgeon's hall, the operation theater, but not through the door. There was the wall, and zip, I was through the wall. I was on the corridors of the hospital. And then, being a curious person, I thought, anyways, this is not so pleasant now. I was still a little confused. I was not in panic. I wonder if the other monk whom I told to go to the waiting room and pray for me during the surgery is actually praying, or whether he is sleeping, because he was getting up always very early at around 3 o'clock, an almost inhuman time, to ready to do some preparations for the upcoming worship on the altar. So therefore he was tired during the day, sometimes at 9 o'clock or so, and this was about the time. So just on my willing, I moved through the corridors. I had no knowledge of how this hospital was built, where the waiting room was, how to get there. But somehow, as if following an unknown compass, I moved through. I all of a sudden found myself in the waiting room, and there he was, praying and not sleeping. I felt all right. But as I had this feeling, oh yes, I'm prayed for, this is good. Nothing can go wrong. I thought, well, isn't everything wrong? I'm here seeing the monk in the waiting room after having crossed through this quite huge hospital, at least from outside, it looked very impressive, and I had gone really hundreds of meters, or had moved hundreds of meters. There's no reason for you to be very relieved. I felt maybe this is an important moment in your life. Maybe it's the you better get back. So, with some worries, I moved back, and I was back. And when I saw trouble was brewing. Gone where was the casual discussion between Dr. Bauer and his assistants about golf. They were panicking, and I saw when I just was there that a lot of blood came, and they couldn't, you know, stop the blood flow. Apparently they had cut a main blood vessel in the abdomen. So then something happened which is recorded by many people who have an out-of-body experience and who come to the brink of death. And again, because this is such powerful information, I want to give it to you as directly as I can. That is not tainted with my memories now, which maybe are not accurate, but I want to go to my diary. Everything around me changed. I saw something that looked like a night sky, but in it giant clock wheels were turning. I felt like I was in a super dimensional clock inside. A small dot of light in the vastness of darkness. Very fragile. Again, the scene changed. I saw different images in my life moving forward in chronological order. The place of my birth. The first adventures as a child. Sitting in the town's school, totally bored. My youth on the island Fehmarn, where I grew up. It seemed I had a front row seat in the movie of my life, playing on fast forward. It was really fast. I was seeing everything I experienced, but because it was so fast, it was more like an... Well, I saw particular strong scenes, but everything in between was a little hazy and so on. I couldn't turn the movie off. I had no control. And I felt where it would bring me to this moment in the hospital. It was not a nice movie because there was this panic surrounding it. It was not enjoying me laughing as a child. No. I watched all this. This is your life. Then somehow, and if you ask me now how, I just can't tell you. I remembered my spiritual training as a monk. And as I remembered, I calmed down. I remember I started to pray. My prayer was like that of a helpless child. It went something like this. My dear Lord, please be with me. Please be by my side and make sure that everything which is happening now is happening according to your will. At that moment, I saw a beautiful divine smile pacifying me and said, don't you know? Anyways, always everything is going according to my will. You don't have to ask me for that. And then another message came, do not worry. You will soon wake up from this anesthesia, and you will do many things for me. This is something given to you to remember. And then the image disappeared. And very soon, I started to slowly come back, as if from an awakening from a troublesome dream. I remember how I was pushed by the anesthetist who liked me. We had discussed something personal before. He had asked me for an advice, and he was pushing me through the doors of the surgeon's theater. I still remember these huge doors. And he smiled at me and waved a little, said, "Didn't I tell you, you wouldn't feel a thing?" I was too tired to start an argument. Too exhausted. Too moved. My dear listeners, I was invited many times to give this, not many times, but a few times to give this presentation. The last time it was at a scientific conference where the question was, are we something more than the body and the brain? And by this experience, the answer was, well, here's someone who perceives and sees things separate from the body in another room, in a waiting room of a hospital, removed hundreds of meters away from where his body and brain and all the senses and the whole machinery is lying. And he sees everything. He remembers. I was curious if what I saw had any relation with the physical world. So I asked Dr. Bauer, "Dr. Bauer, I was out of the body and I heard you just before talking about a golf move." And I told him what I remembered the move was. And he said, "No!" 2 weeks later, when he saw I was not a troublemaker, but a monk, he invited me and said, "Let us have a personal discussion. What did I talk about golf?" I told him what I remembered. And he said, I negated this when you asked the first time because we made a mistake. We cut in a blood main blood vessel, not the main, but a main thing, and that should not happen in good surgery. And when we were troubled, and in fact, I needed to be operated upon a second time because of this, because the inner bleeding did not stop. It was a major cut, and my belly expanded. I must have looked like a pregnant woman just before giving birth to her child, so much inflated, and I needed to have a second surgery, which was very, I don't want to remember that. I had no such memories, or nothing happened like I had explained to you. I spoke to the monk who was praying in the waiting room and described to him in detail the waiting room, in as much detail as I remembered, you know. When I had finished my discussion, the next speaker was requested to come on stage. It was Dr. Pim van Lommel. He's man of renown. He is a heart surgeon from not Amsterdam, but I think Leiden. It's in Holland. And he has written a book about near-death experiences. And he immediately said, my work is now very easy. This monk has mentioned all the different things which I would have had difficulties to convince you of. This is a very experience which had a lot of emotional impact. You have something like a holographic life view review, and often something which has to do with a preview of things to come. Like, remember when I heard you will have many, when I inquired and the answer came from the Lord, you will do many important things for me. So it's a review and a preview which happens. And it brings with it a gift that is the loss of fear about one's own death. You know, one has seen only the body dies, but I am existing beyond the body. I am different from the body. It's not a philosophical concept. One has seen it. One has been shocked by it. One has been totally impacted by it. And so on. And this, my dear listeners, is, I think, the main gift. You realize, yes, I'm different from the body. It's not that I hear this only in Aris and Rasanas and Michaels and Vipin's upbuilt sessions. One knows it. Yes, yes, yes. And I think you also will have a little benefit to know this, you know. And one knows, I'm just making experiences in my life now, and I have the absolute freedom to step back at any time and choose to correct the experience, like a painter who steps back and corrects his painting. And this is so wonderful. I'm different from the body, and I can choose. I am free to choose. Therefore, in old traditions, there is always a meditation, and I will give you a small taste of it today, about one's own mortality. I learned this from the king of Puri. Puri is a place in Orissa, that means India. I'm just thinking, is it west or east? You can find it easy on the map. It's where the famous temple of Jagannath is standing. And king is only to be a king there is an official position, a symbolic or representative position, not a position which holds political power, because there is democracy in India. However, the royal dynasties are continuing there, and although the present kings are only figureheads, they are held in great respect by the common people, because they are seen as representatives of God. That's their idea. So when I was there, I received a big room. The room gave me nightmares. There were stuffed out tigers and boars and all kinds of wild animals which the predecessors of the king had killed in combat, and so on. And so I did not sleep very well. It was a nightmarish room. But what would happen next morning was even more shocking of sorts. It was around 5 o'clock. that I heard before my door the blaring of instruments. There was something like trumpets and loud drumming. When I opened the door, I saw a mourning procession, not early morning, mourning to lament. Oh, mourning. So I thought, was there death in this overnight? So I moved out of my room. I caught up to the point where the stretcher was carried, and I saw on the stretcher my friend, the king. People were lamenting and crying, and there was this music, sad music. And we went into the courtyard. There was a funeral pyre. Already, I thought, already, they are really fast here. The stretcher was put on top of the pyre. Moments later, the king sat up. All the mourners disappeared in the hallways, chatting happily with each other. The drummers put their drums to the side. And I looked at my friend, said, please, what was this? He said, a little bit, is the word nonchalantly? Nonchalantly. No, he said nonchalantly, a little bit. I do this every morning. I said, really? What is the particular benefit of doing such a shocking procession? And he became serious. He said something. I've also written it down because I so many things happen in life. I'm an avid note-taker of life. He said, our time is limited here. Let us waste not even a single moment by living the life of someone else. Even if it should be the life of a king. He wanted to be himself. He wanted to be in contact with essence. He wanted to not be distracted by the outside life of a king. And he, as I said, he was a friend to me. We had met in Germany where he had been my guest, and I had to arrange part of his schedule to meet so-and-so. I was asked to do this and to plan a little bit. You have to see this museum, you have to take the what all tourists to Germany do, take a boat on the Rhine and all this. Together, he was there with his queen, and they were very grateful, and I met him as a person, not as a position, and so on. And he said, this little morning ritual helps me to distinguish between that which is truly essential and that which is unessential. I imagine that I have just died, and then I look back at my life and said, did you really use the opportunities properly? And then when I get down from this funeral pyre, then I think, today I'm living my life with a spring in my steps. He said like this. I still remember this English. A spring in my steps. It means enthusiastically. And, you know, Indians have a very particular way of using English phrases. But that's how I remembered it. But the spring in my steps. I'm living my life. Yes. There is a notable American thinker with whom I would like to end this, but a quick and secret glance on the clock shows me that we're coming close. So let me first do a little meditation. And then it will be very brief, but I hope to bring you to something similar. It won't be scary, don't worry. I have become a very, let us say, I'm conscious that not all of us are just entering such a session with the desire to make a similar deep experience or stark experience. Just I request you, as I speak, you can watch the screen, but when I give you this, when I request you to close your eyes, please do so. Take a few deep breaths. And on each exhale, every time you let the air pass out of your nose, relax. Relax your shoulders. Relax your legs and close your eyes. Where do you sit right now? In your mind's eye, see your room. Who is close to you? Find at least three people that are now close to you at this stage of your life. What is your life like at the moment? Let images appear of the places you go, the encounters with people which you have. Or if you work from home, type of work which you do. Is there anything that you would like to do which you are not yet doing? move forward in time. Ten years from now, what are the type of people that are still close to you, that images arise? Have some people died in the meantime? Parents, friends who were taken by an accident, move forward now. The time which I will describe, you're lying in a white bed. You are significantly older. Oh, your hand looks so fragile. Your skin looks almost transparent. People are around the bed. Some are saying prayers, final prayers. Others are crying. Is there anything which you have not yet done? Anything that you should have done? Listen to whatever comes up. I request you now to come back to room awareness. It helps to just rub the hands as, like I'm doing now. Bring them to your eyes as if palming. And give yourself the time to come back to the computer in front of you. The visionary entrepreneur Stephen Jobs, who may have been the mind behind the computer which you use at the present moment, says something which I can only think, wow, he really said it very nicely. I like to think that he heard it when, at the time when he was so poor that he went every day to a temple in Boston, not every day, every Sunday, to fill up his stomach and his all the pipes of his body with good, nourishing vegetarian food. And during that time, I like to think he may have heard this meditation in the temple. But I think he read a lot. I don't know. So this is what he said. I have looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no, for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Remembering that I'll be dead soon is the most important tool I've ever encountered to make me make the big choices in life. Because almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. My experience at the surgeon's table, where I totally left my body for some time and saw in a brief review my life passing by, has given me one deep inspiration that I was born as an original. Why should I die as a copy of someone else, even if the society values the copy very much and applauds to it? I was born as an original, a part of the Supreme, therefore I feel this was very impactful. In our next session, we will talk about an experience I had in the Balkans, where being on the brink of death taught me yet another experience, but that will remain a surprise for next time, what that is. I will end here. I will turn now to our hosts. I'm sorry, I tried to make it shorter, but as I was going through it, I said, no, this one I also have to speak about. This I also have to speak about. So, good. Hari Prasad or Rasanath, how do we continue?
This was exactly what we needed, was to really get inside the experience with you and come out of it with you. So we will have questions at the close in a moment. And as there is time in the remaining sessions, we can have questions during the session, but this is also intended to be for getting into the experiences with you and coming out with the realizations. So, perfect. Thank you to everyone. By the way, Satchinandan Swami has joined us from Germany, and he will be joining us from Germany each session, and we have people around the world that are joining us, which is incredible. We're very, very honored. Yeah, we will have four more weeks left with Satchinandan Swami. We'll get many more exotic and intense and inspiring experiences from him. So please stay tuned and invite anybody that you feel would benefit. Anyone who could benefit from this program is most welcome. You can just have them register at the link at the registration link that you registered on. So with that, we will close. Thank you very, very, very much. And for those who would like to stay after and have some more time with Satchinandan Swami, we have time for questions. Much appreciated. And see you next week at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you. So I have a question from Scott. Thank you for your grace. Has your experience with death changed how you remember that you are alive now?
Has my experience of death changed how I remember that I'm alive now? Yes, very much. There is such a difference between theory and experience. And once you make such an experience, you are just more grateful, I think, for the moments which you have. You see the opportunities which I see the opportunities which I have very clearly, and that makes me really, really very conscious of how I use the time. But something even more beneficial, I was hesitating if I would get into it, is coming out of the victim role. Victim role, I know, is a very strong word, and I've thrown it here into the discussion to make you listen very strongly. What I mean is, so often we modern people who have so many things on our plate to do each day feel overwhelmed. We feel that the many duties, the many anxieties, the many things around our life have just taken a control of their own, and we don't feel our life, the vibrancy of our life. So after this experience, let me say, this experience introduced me. It was like my first initiation into this. I needed a few more because I'm such a joyful human being that I sometimes am too much joyful. I need to sometimes be a little bit, let us see, more systematic and so on, in order to get my things done, grounded maybe, and so on. Monks have that nature. They are devotional, they are joyful, they are happy people. But still, I needed a few more so when things get so much, like you can't believe, a monk, how many invitations, how many Zoom calls, how many, I'm writing this book, then I'm preparing the other book, then calls, then many students who learn, then the project in India just now, we built something and a ton of cement was stolen. Ooh, what to do now? And so many things in the life. This helps me to not to take my life more lightly. Can we say like this in the English language? In the German language, we have something that would translate as, angels can fly because they take their life more lightly. In other words, you have opportunities, much more opportunities, much more freedom when you understand. I can get up from the drama of my life at any moment. I don't have to take it so serious that I'm overwhelmed. Of course, I take the tasks, beautiful tasks you do, but you don't become overwhelmed and stressed out and burdened. So yes, death has, or my encounter with death has helped me to live more lightly, more joyfully, more consciously.
Thank you very much. Question from Ravi. Firstly, thank you for sharing the experience. I would like to find out if during your out-of-body experience, did you have a feeling of suffering? Did you experience suffering?
Not physical suffering. That was totally stilled. That was totally overcome. But I felt some anxiety, mental suffering, in other words, because I was not at all prepared for this. And this anxiety only calmed down and then finally went away when I took shelter. This is something which I have not spoken about, but there are reference points in life that can give you the absolute, that can give you peace. Religiously, they are called refuge, but if you don't wish to use that type of language, you could say reference points that have content. Calming content. And that was when I was absolutely free from anxieties. But when I saw the review of my life, you remember the image of someone having a front row seat for the movie of his life, when I saw that, I must say I did feel anxiety. But then I found this content point, that content-filled reference point, and that was very good. Then it went.
Thank you. We have several questions. The first one is from Aditya. The loss of fear of death. It seems difficult to overcome the fear of death if we are not sure where we will go after death. And even if we know that we will continue, or even if we know that we will continue to exist after death. So what can we do when we're uncertain if there is even anything after death? And if we believe that there is something after death, where, what do we do with not knowing where we'll go?
Yeah, first of all, there is a wisdom text which says that the moment of death, there are four fears. One is the uncertainty, what will happen now. And there are other fears like, what will happen? I lose everything now. What will happen to them? What you know, like this. There are four fears, and many people asked me, "How do you know all these spiritual things which you talk about? What is gives you the certitude?" And I say, well, the very fact that I'm alive, because life is a spiritual phenomena for me. It is, when I was young, I asked my parents, how did I come into the world? And they said to me, well, your mother and your father loved each other very much. So much love was there. And then you came, attracted by that love. Later, I got the book where everything is described biologically. But that was my first answer, which I got to the question. You wouldn't be here if the fact that you are alive means that life has entered the combination of matter and made it rise. And at the moment of death, I can only recommend to all of you doubters out there, if there are, be gracious to a dying person. Help them by being at their side. Comfort them. And you will note, and everyone sees it, at the particular moment when it happens, there's something that departs the body. You will feel it. You will know it. You will sense it. You don't need at that time an intellectual discussion about it. You will say, he is gone. She is gone. Yes, death is a great teacher that we are different from the body because we leave it behind like a shirt. And that moment can be sensed. Greatest scientists have seen that. Some have exclaimed on the deathbed, Seele, was nun? This is German. Soul, what now? You know, in German it rings very nicely in the ear. In English, I don't know. I hope I have answered the question. But yes, death can be a fearful thing. My dear listeners, today we listen to something which is, I mean, many people have it, this type of experience, but when you hear it, it's clearly extraordinary. You don't hear about this every day, you know. No. But we don't need to go so far as we have gone in our discussions. We can just go to the point, one day will come where all of this does not matter any longer. What matters then? And I think the answer is that you have lived as an original, the way you are created, and you are not living the life of someone else. You're not walking in two shoes that are three numbers too small for you.
Thank you so much. A question from Ananya. What advice would you give to a younger person dealing with the question of their mortality for the first time?
If you deal with the question of mortality for the first time, I assume that either a near and dear one is in the process of dying, or another scenario could be that you yourself contact a fatal, some type of disease which makes you wonder, hopefully I don't belong to the 1% who dies from this disease. You have some anxiety, in other words. In whatever way you contact the thoughts of your own mortality, I would always give the same, advice. Find out the things which have the strength to give meaning to your life and live this. And stay with these things. You will get a lot of strength from these things. And it is said, when you find your own purpose, that what you are made for, then that purpose will protect you. You will not feel anxieties and so on. I must say that I once had an amazing experience. I had another surgery which had much more heavier after effects. Don't worry, I won't tell you about my surgeries any longer. And I took a long time to recover. And it was in the Bosnian mountains. And it was a heavy leg injury. I mean, a really heavy leg injury. And I needed to train my legs after I had been in bed for a long time so that the muscles would form again. So heavy injury. So I needed to walk with two walking sticks first and keep the body moving and moving every day. I was high in the mountains, and I remember one day I was walking through fog, just trying to get my strength back, my muscles back, feeling a little bit the pain of so on. And I had, at that time, I listened to lectures to divert my mind. I had earphones and a little MP3 recording, and I listened to a lecture of my own spiritual master. And here I am walking through the fog, and I hear this, his voice. He asked the question, "What do you do for eternity?" You know, when you're walking, you think, did I just make that up, or that was so profound? So I wanted to record, go back on this lecture, but because I'm not such a technical person, I had to start from the beginning again. But I didn't mind. I wanted to catch if there was this sentence. And after 15 minutes or so, "What do you do for eternity?" "Wow," I said. And I again went back, and this time I had the intuition to do the right thing on the foolish thing on the recording device. And the sentence came up again, "What do you do for eternity?" I was enlivened. I said, yes, I'm investing, I'm immortal, I'm here, death will come, but I can do things that are of essential value. I will invest in my eternal life. And doing this gave me so much joy. All you young people who think you will never die, because that's what young people think. And who all of a sudden have something happening to them that they are forced to think about mortality of the human species. And they're forced to think, maybe this will happen to me as well one day. Invest in essence. That will give you shelter. Some of you are familiar with my particular spiritual training and know the word dharma, purpose. It comes from a root word, dri, and dri means maintain, to maintain, to uphold. Not to upbuild, but to uphold. Dharma has this implicit meaning that if you live your dharma, translation, if you live your purpose, at that time you are upheld, you get structure, you get security, you get confidence, you get some protection. Yes, that's my second answer. Try to find your dharma.
Fantastic. So we have a question from Ghislaine. She's thanking you for the gift of this experience, and she asks, would you speak more to how your monastic training served you in the gift of the out-of-body experience and how you were tangibly meeting the soul. How did your monastic training help you in that experience to tangibly meet the soul? How can we prepare accordingly, those of us not living as monks?
What a wonderful question you have asked. Such a relevant question. Thank you so much. Well, in monastic training, there are few things, and once you understand them in principle, you can imbibe these in your life outside the monastery, in normal busy life. One principle of monastic training is to every day hear in the wisdom texts, for instance, the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, that is a text many of you are familiar with. And hearing this knowledge is giving your thought a fresh direction. It opens a new perspective. It gives you a view that you didn't have before. And that is the start of genuine spiritual life. So this was the first gift, which I use these. I will call upon those gifts which you can do wherever you are. The second is the monastic training involves sangha. Sangha means association, and gives advices how to make the association, to lift it on a spiritual level, no? So that spiritual exchanges are possible and we can benefit from both the insights and the well wishes of others, the blessings of others. So you can do that also. You can have good inspiring sangha, like I think you have with in the Upbuild community, no? That helps you also. Then the last thing, which is very necessary, or the last gift, is practice, some sort of spiritual practice. Practice will shape what you are in the future. Once again, practice, the practice which you do now will shape what you become in the future. Such important thing. A little spiritual practice can be done every day and you will see how small drops, doesn't need to be big drops, small drops of practice will wear away the hardest stone, the greatest obstacles in your life. But they need to be, it's good if they are regular coming. Yeah. What a wonderful question you have asked. I took these three things, I call them the three P's. Philosophy, people, and practice, three, with me to Varanasi, the town of the Indian town which has the burning guts. I read today in a very nice book called Life Final Examine, and here is a photo of Varanasi. I don't know if I hold it, down here, yeah, like this. Can you see it without light reflection, Hari Prasad, or is the light reflecting? It's okay, good. See, there is a flame. Do you see the flame here? That's a burning gut where the dead people are brought and born. And I was sitting there, nearby there, and seeing this for a whole day, how people brought their deceased ones and how they were given funeral at the banks of the sacred river Ganges. And as I saw this, for a whole day, I left my sitting place, finally in the evening, with these images. And do you know how I felt? I'm alive! And it was such a affirming, a life-affirming understanding. Gandhi said this, birth and death are like two boxes posed opposite to each other. And each one of the boxes, when you open them totally, oops, this is hard. They hold inside the key for the other box. In other words, if you understand life properly, you lose fear of death. If you understand death properly, you get enthusiasm for life. He said it so nicely. I just found this box on my... I'm sitting before my writing table, so it was just there. Good. Hari Prasad, now what should we do to honor people's time? Maybe we should go for 3 more minutes, then I think we have done a good justice to this. I also must say, as much as I would like to spend all for us here, it is 7:30 here in Germany. I still have to do some urgent things, but let us properly say goodbye. What should we do? Should we have another question or short question or what?
I'm open to, I think we're at the time where we should probably close. So maybe what we can do is, if your question did not get asked yet, you can keep that with you. We still have 4 more sessions left, and we can ask that question at that time. That sounds good? Great.
I can also suggest something. We should really, this question and answer session is very, very important because it brings so much more out. And it is also good for us because just like, you know, we are meeting now, those of you who are interested, for 4 more times, and you will see we will form something like a invisible community. Or is it it's even visible when we click on the computer, but it is a community that can be inspiring to us. It can help us. It can move forward. And therefore, I will try to give more time to questions, but the subjects are just so, you will see, it's mind fascinating subjects are coming up. And but I could also do, when questions are not answered, what we can do is we can just take the question, then a brief written answer can be found. I think you have a web page, and like everyone else has, I mean, Upbuild must have a good web page. I can already see it in my mental eye. And then somehow we will find a way to answer the question, in other words.
Mm-hmm. So much appreciate that. Okay, so great. So we'll have the opportunity to ask those questions in the remaining sessions. And if anything doesn't get answered, we can also then have those questions sent to Satchinanda and Swami, and we'll answer. Wonderful. So thank you all again for being with us. And thank you, Satchinanda and Swami. We're so, so honored to have you. And we can't wait for next week with you in the Balkans.
Yes. Thank you. All the best for everyone on this call. All the best for you. And I hope that some seeds have fallen into your heart. Now, please cultivate them nicely so that they can grow and become strong. Oh. Wonderful.
There's a lot of gratitude in the chat.
Yeah, this is is it Hendrik? Hendrik, do I see you? Yeah. And Farastu, Haribol. I'm so happy to see. And our Rukmini is there. Hopefully there was something for you in there. And yes, my adopted family, Tsipi, Weiss, and no, they have adopted me. I'm very happy. And yes, thank you very much, everyone. Happy to see you. And I would love to... yes, let's meet next in 1 week, I think. All the best for you and goodbye.